When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read, so I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, I am chatting with Rebecca Searle about expiration dates. I am a huge fan of Rebecca's and have read all of her adult novels, starting with The Dinner List on. I am always so excited when I hear she has a new book out, and expiration dates is just delightful. It's an incredibly thought-provoking concept and one that I have not stopped thinking about since I finished the book. Rebecca is an author and television writer who lives in Los Angeles. She is the author of numerous novels and co-developed the hit TV adaptation of her YA series, Famous in Love. She received her MFA from the New School in New York City. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome, Rebecca. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great as well, and I'm thrilled that you're back. I always love chatting with you.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I loved expiration dates, and it looks like everyone else is too. You have a great Kirkus review and a starred review from Publishers Weekly. Congrats.
Thank you so much. I know, my first star of my career. It's very exciting and very sweet. People are just very generous and lovely with my books, and it's very appreciated. I'm very lucky.
Wow. You do a wonderful job with them, and they're so creative, and I think that really resonates with people.
Thank you.
Well, let's start out with you giving me a quick summary of expiration dates.
Sure. So expiration dates is a story of Daphne Bell. She is a young woman who, from the time she was like 8 years old, every time she meets a man, she receives a slip of paper with his name and a number on it. And that number is the exact amount of time that they'll spend together. And the book opens with her, for the first time, getting a piece of paper with just a name. And there's no, forgive me, expiration date. And so it's the story of Daphne and her sort of dating history. It's a book about what it means to be single and what it means to be searching, and of course, ultimately what that paper ends up meaning.
So how did you come up with the idea for this one? I'm always so curious about that as I read your books.
Well, I had this idea. I mean, listen, I was single for a very long time. I met my husband when I was almost 37. And it was just an interesting idea to me. Okay, so what if you could see, what if you knew, you know, like what the time frame was? Every time you met a new man, you would know how much time you're going to spend together. You wouldn't enter into every relationship thinking, oh, like, could this be it? Could I live with this? Could I live with that? You know, is this maybe my person? And then, as is my process, I tend to sort of turn on an idea for about a year until I come to that midway twist, which all of my books have had. I'm not necessarily saying they'll all have them in the future, but that twist sort of ends up being the why, like what this book is really sort of capital A about. And from that point, I started writing. So I guess it was really born out of my own experience and maybe some of my own wish fulfillment in fiction.
It just really made me think, like, I've thought so much about it since I finished the book. What if I got those kind of letters and our notes, I guess, and what would I do with them? I mean, if it's 3 days, I guess you just think, okay, great, we're going to have a ball. But what if it's like 3 years?
Yeah, it's interesting because on the one hand, you could say you could really be potentially more present in the experience, right? Because you're not worried about how it's going to turn out, if it's going to turn out. But then on the other hand, you, as Daphne does, might always have people at a little bit of an arm's distance because you know that no one is a person that's going to last forever. So I think it's both things.
So I wonder, do you think it's a curse or a gift? I've really thought a lot about that.
I think it would probably depend on the person.
Yes, if you had to spend 3 whole days with this one person, but you have to spend 2 years with another. I just don't know. I think would I want to know that or not? But it very much makes a great story.
Oh, well, thank you. It was certainly interesting to write.
I bet. So you include time travel or magical elements in your books. Is that stuff that's always interested you?
Yes. I remember writing short stories in college and they all had some kind of like magical twist. One of the first short stories I wrote was about this couple that breaks up and time actually stops. Like it physically stops. This like leaf is hovering in the air outside of their house. And it's just night all of the time for like months as they try to sort of sort through the pieces of their relationship. And so I was always just fascinated with magic as a way to kind of just further the point of what it is I'm trying to say. You could tell a story about a woman who is a serial dater, and you could tell a story about all of her different relationships and how it is she's, you know, coming to terms with being single and what she's really looking for in a partner and all of those things. But isn't it a little bit more interesting if you can add another layer to her? So I don't know. I really see magic as a way to open up my world and kind of cut to the heart of the theme that I'm wanting to talk about quicker and easier.
And obviously no spoilers. But did it take you a while to figure out what the twist was going to be in this one?
Yes, it took me about a year. The concept itself I liked, but it felt a little bit insignificant in a way. Like I wasn't really sure, what the weight was. And then I realized I won't say much more than that.
Exactly. I know. And that's the thing, but that'll get people wanting to read your book. But I just was so curious as I was reading, okay, like where is this going? What is going to happen? And I loved the way you did that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So did anybody inspire Daphne's character?
Well, I think that all of my protagonists are always not me, but maybe facets of who I am. And she certainly has a lot of the experiences. Is that the right word? I'm trying to think about this. I mean, not necessarily the experience I've had, but maybe some of the tones of the experiences I've had, if that makes sense. I think that they're all of the men in her world and all of the men in expiration dates were lessons for Daphne, and they're her lessons. They weren't necessarily my lessons, but I'm sure that there was a lot of overlap there.
That some of the things you experienced while you were dating a variety of people, she experiences in the story.
I think so. Yeah, certainly. And I think like just some lessons that you learn, I was actually talking about this earlier today that I think that when you're dating, at least for me, when I was in it, I felt like whenever a relationship would end, I would feel so quote unquote back there. Like I would say, I can't believe this happened again. Like how many times do I have to learn this lesson? And it was only in looking back that I really understood that they were all actually different lessons. They were all different things I had to learn, but they felt so similar in a way in the moment. And so I think it was interesting to write. I wrote this book, by the way, before I got married last year, but I wrote this book before I had met my husband. And I don't know, it was a real sort of act of faith in a way, the writing of expiration dates, because I felt where Daphne was and is for a lot of the book while I was writing it.
Well, and I think it's one of those things that our world has gotten so much broader with social media and the internet, but in a way, almost so much narrower too. And it's hard to meet people and find the right person. And sometimes it does take a really long time.
Yes, sometimes it does. It is very hard to meet people. It is true. We are less in the real world as than we probably should be.
I think that's right. And I think that what you're talking about with respect to lessons makes perfect sense. Because every time you have a breakup, you first think, oh my gosh, I've got to start over again. But I think when you reflect back, you do realize, okay, I learned these positive things and these negative things from this relationship. And so moving forward, I now know more about myself and I know more about what I'm looking for, what I'm willing to tolerate, what I won't tolerate. And so I do think you're right. It feels like it's the same thing over and over again. But as you look back, you realize, oh, I learned a lot from him. And I learned a lot from this relationship. And I would never do this again.
Yes, absolutely. It was a huge tool of growth for me. And I, you know, funnily enough, I feel grateful for every experience that I have, however painful it was at the time. It all really made me the person that was ready to ultimately be with the person that was mine.
I think that's exactly right. Well, what about picking names? Because you're talking about these characters, you spend so much time with them, you're writing them. How do you decide on their names?
That's a great question. I don't know if it has a satisfying answer. I don't remember. I think Daphne just came to me. The last names are always a little bit interesting because you want them to be a little bit creative, but I don't really know where Belle came from. Her name is Daphne Belle. I'm not sure about her. I know that, you know what? I don't know. I actually don't. I'm so sorry. I don't know how to answer this question because the names just kind of come. The names just sort of emerge. I will say on many occasions go back and rename a character in a book. For a while, I was naming like all of the female characters Jessica, and I was naming like all of the male characters Greg. And I had to just like remember that I had already had a Greg. His name is Aaron, but his name is also Greg in 5 years. And so I had titled somebody, I think in One Italian Summer, one of the lead men was Greg. And I had to go back and remember that I needed a different name. So I don't know. It's not easy. And the short answer to that incredibly long-winded response I gave you is that, like, it's not my favorite part of the job.
Well, it's got to be difficult because names really do mean things to different people. And I think you can title people in a story and they're going to get one idea with Daphne and another idea with Sophia or whatever it's going to be. And so you have to kind of think through your characters' names and the men as well. And yes. You could have Greg in every single book, I guess.
Yes, you could. And ultimately, you can't control what, you know, how names are received to everyone else. I think you have to find what sort of feels right for yourself.
Absolutely. I agree with that because everybody has their own perception about names.
Yes. Like, I dated a Hugo in high school and I hated him. So, whatever the story is.
I think that's right. Yeah. I'm just always so curious how authors land on names because obviously they're there forever once the book is out in the world.
Yes. And listen, I'm not above a Google. I've been on maybe many a babyname.com website.
Trying to find some new names.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, you infuse the story with all sorts of details about Los Angeles. It's almost a love letter to the city. Let's talk about that.
Yes. Well, you know, all of my books really have a lot to do with place. And I think that basically that charts back to the fact that I was absolutely enamored of New York City when I was living there. And I lived there for 13 years. And so I was just so in love with that city. And it felt like just the place that my writing came from. And so it very naturally found its way into The Dinner List and then in 5 years. And then I wrote One Italian Summer. One Italian Summer, you know, takes place in Italy, Positano. And there's no way to write about Italy without like really drawing that place. At least you shouldn't. My God, if you're going to set a book in Italy, like, please tell me what everyone is eating. I need to know. And so now it's sort of just like a hallmark of what it is I do, my own writing. I really like to orient both myself and my readers in a particular place. And this time that place is Los Angeles. It is the city I now live and have for the last 5 years. I love it very much. I went to college here. I have a very, very different perception of Los Angeles than I did when I was younger. And I think that's a good thing. So, you know, Daphne's Los Angeles has quite a bit in common with mine, and I'm excited for people to get to read it.
I love strong senses of place, and so I think that is one of the things that always resonates for me with your books. I am much more familiar with New York City, so reading about a lot of those places, I was like, oh yes, I've been there, I know that. I'm not as familiar with LA, but it was still fun to read about it and learn more about the city.
Yes, and all the places in my books, with the exception of a few, but most of the places in all my books are real. Real restaurants and real hikes and real, like, they're all real. And so that's also fun, is that people then get to visit and kind of follow the trail. And I enjoy that quite a bit.
Absolutely. What surprised you the most when you were writing this one?
Well, I didn't know how it was going to turn out. I mean, that sounds, I guess, really rudimentary and kind of dodo brain to say out loud, but I really didn't. It's similar to One Italian Summer, in which there is like a little bit, I kind of I don't hate, but I don't really enjoy the term love triangle because I think it's a little bit reductive, and the book is about more things than that. But okay, there is a little bit of a love triangle in this book. And I wasn't really sure what side of the coin Daphne was going to land on. And choosing a partner is, you know, in life, but also in books, is sort of like choosing like a theme, I guess. You know, they're very different lessons and very different sort of like capital A, what this, you know, what this book is, like I said, capital A about, dependent on which of the men she ends up deciding to be with, or if she decides to be with either of them. And so I wasn't entirely sure how that was going to unfold. And then it just kind of, you know, eventually it seems obvious if you're doing your job right.
I can't remember from when we've talked in the past, but do you plot or do you just pants? Do you just write and hope it all develops?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I have, you know, I'll have that conceit, and then I have the midway twist, and then I will generally make a list of maybe like, you know, sort of like 20 to 30 plot points that I think I have to hit. But like, it's fluid, and I really let the characters sort of guide me and tell me where they need to get to.
Because I think trying to decide which person she's going to end up with, if she does end up with one, would kind of guide how you were writing them.
Well, it's a little bit of a, I don't know, I guess I could see how that would be true. And in my case, it's not, because part of what I really love to write is women who, I mean, this is also going to sound pretty rudimentary, but it's true, like women who grow, women who develop. You know, there's always like this course of evolution over the course of my books. And so the place that I start her in is not the place that she ends up in. And yeah, and sometimes that journey surprises me. So the person that I'm writing sometimes, you know, takes on a little free will of her own.
Well, that makes sense. Absolutely. Going back to the notes arriving, did you have to think a lot about logistics, like exactly how they would arrive to her?
I think that falls a little bit under the category of the how of the magical realism, which is not an area that I spend a lot of time in. I tend to just say like, okay, this is a thing that's happening and we're all going to get on board now. And if you read my books and if you like my books, then that is something you're okay with. And a lot of people are not, but I don't, you know, I often say like, I don't write time travel novels. I don't write books that have a mechanism. And so I think it was really important in structuring the notes that they just feel kind of like whimsical and fun and natural, but that I knew I was never going to get into the specifics of how those notes got there.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is a little bit different in terms of explaining who's sending them. But I guess it would be kind of fun, I think, to think about how is she actually going to get the note for this
yes.
person, or how is she actually going to get the note for that person? Not where are they coming from, but how is she receiving them? Does that make sense? Those seem a little different to me, I guess.
Oh, they are totally different. And it was fun. It was fun to think like, oh, where would this show up? And there's a little bit of, you know, like I play with it a little bit in terms of the timeline of when she gets these notes as well in the different relationships and how that transforms things.
Absolutely. You can see I've thought a lot about the notes.
I love it. I love yeah. it.
What about the highlight of writing this one?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like I can't really say, because the two highlights of this book are probably like things that are really big spoilers. And I know, you know, folks haven't read the book yet, but I really found that Daphne had from the jump, from like the first paragraph, she had an incredibly strong sense of self. And I had just come off writing One Italian Summer, which is a book about a young woman who's just lost her mother. And Katie, who's the protagonist of One Italian Summer, really did not have a strong sense of self, particularly in the beginning of the book. It was like very hard to find her, like what's motivating her? Why is she the way that she is? It was all sort of in relationship to her mother. And it was a challenge to kind of like get her where she needed to go, because I didn't feel like she was so like active in her own life, and Daphne really was. And so that was really a breath of fresh air. And I guess that's why I think that I maybe gave her so much autonomy in the writing of this book, is because she just came to me so energetic and so formed and with such a clear idea of who she was.
Do you think it gets easier each book, or do you find that you're almost starting over from square one each time?
It's both, but the answer is that yes, it gets easier. It gets easier because you know you can do it. I think when you sit down the first time, you think, oh my God, how am I ever going to get to 65,000 words, you know, to 300 something pages? It just seems daunting. It seems impossible. And, you know, expiration dates is going to be my 8th novel. So I know I can do it now. And I think that alone can really drive you forward.
And do you have a favorite of your books? I know that's a tough question, but sometimes people do and sometimes they don't.
I mean, not really. I mean, my favorite is always the book that I'm currently talking about or writing because it's fresh and it's new and it's in my brain and it's exciting and it's, you know, it's the thing that I'm like most obsessed with. But I think if I had to say, they all are special for different reasons. The Dinner List, I think, remains my most like tender and personal book because it was also my underdog. Like it's the book that I think has reached like the smallest audience of the books that I've published. And it was my first adult novel. And I wrote it. I had so much to say at that point about an entire decade of my 20s in New York. And so that book shares a lot in common with my life in a way. And it's very special to me. And then, you know, In 5 Years was the book that changed my life. It was my first New York Times bestseller. It really totally entirely pivoted the trajectory of my whole life. And so I feel a lot of just gratitude for that book. But I think I think authors tend to like their underdogs a little bit. It's not that fun to like In 5 Years. Like when people tell me that's their favorite book, I'm like, okay, you know, it's more fun if it's a book that maybe, you know, not a lot of people have read. I find that more interesting. So perhaps that's why I'm still aligned with The Dinner List.
Well, and The Dinner List is so special for me because I've always been totally entranced with that concept of if I could invite 5 people to dinner, whoever they are, and sit down and have a conversation, who would it be? And it's one of those things that over the course of my life, it's obviously changed. But I think about that decently regularly. I don't know what that says about me. So as soon as I saw that your book was coming out, I was so excited about it and I loved it. And, you know, I've read all of your books since then. So for me, it's definitely special too, because it's how I found you. But it's one of those things that I think is such an intriguing concept.
I love that. That's so nice. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's an interesting question. And you're right, it does change over the course of your life. And I think it becomes more personal. And listen, like we lose people. It's not, you know, I think when I sat down to write this book, and I understand that this interview is not about The Dinner List, so forgive me. But when I sat down to write that book, you know, I thought it would be all celebrities and politicians and interesting people. But the truth is, it's of course always the people that we've lost that we want one more night with.
Exactly. And I think as you get older, there are more of those. So the celebrities go out and those people come in. But when you're younger, yes, it's mainly those type of people.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's talk about the title and cover for this one. I love the cover.
Thank you. I love it too.
Is that where it started or did you all have to work on it? What was that process like?
Well, the title was the title from the time that I came up with the idea. It felt very obvious. And my dear friend Morgan Mattson, who is also the mother of the real life Murphy dog, he does exist. And he's exactly as he's described in the book. People always ask me if any characters are based off of actual people. And the answer is no, with the exception of this dog, Murphy.
I love that.
But she's like really great at titles. And so she's oftentimes the person that I'll kind of like bounce ideas off of when I'm just toying around with a new concept. And so I told her what this book was about and we kind of batted around titles. And so I had the title, I think, pretty much from the time I started writing, or at least a few months in, really early. And I was really nervous because we have this like really wonderful like cover design team, but our designer has the title fonts for In 5 Years, One Italian Summer and Expiration Dates are all in her handwriting. It's a particular font that she's done. And so her name's Lewan, she's amazing. And I was really nervous that expiration would be too long of a word and it wouldn't work on the cover. And so I'm very glad that it did. I love it. I love it. It's very place evocative and it's really, it's fun. It's also very sparkly and shiny. So I think it'll be a fun beach bag edition for the summer.
And it definitely represents the story.
Yes. Yes. I feel like it does.
Which I love because it drives me crazy when I look at a cover and I read a book and then I look back at the cover and I'm like, I don't really see the connection here.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I definitely do for yours.
Thank you. Yeah, I love it. I love it. They did a really great job.
They really did. Well, before we wrap up, Rebecca, what have you read recently that you really liked?
Okay, so I just finished Dolly Alderton's Good Material, and I really loved it. I feel like I say this in every single interview, but my like gold standard of like a male POV book is The Love Affairs of Nathaniel P. by Adele Waldman. I just love that book so much. I found it so fascinating. I felt like I was dating that Brooklyn author. I was like convinced that she had also dated him and written this book about him. And Good Material is really just like the anatomy of a breakup. And like, I think very importantly, the anatomy of a breakup in your 30s, in your mid 30s. And I loved it. There were so many truths in it about like the pain of that and, you know, like what it means to be intimate with somebody and then to be strangers. And I really, really, really loved it. So that's my current recommended read.
I did not read it pre-publication, but there was so much chatter about it when it came out that I picked it up and it's sitting right here on my bookshelf.
Oh yeah, crack it open. I think you'll enjoy it.
I definitely need to.
And then there's also another book I'm going to shout out really quickly called Sylvia's Second Act. It comes out March 12th. It's by Hilary Yablon, and it's really wonderful about this woman in her 60s who gets a divorce from her husband and decides to just like recreate her life in New York City. I thought it was absolutely delightful and adored it. So pre-order that if you're so inclined.
And I have that sitting in my NetGalley list, I guess, or whatever. So I need to read it. It looks delightful.
It's delightful. You will absolutely adore it.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that. So I'll have to bump both of those up the list.
Yes.
The ever-growing list, which I'm sure you have as well, because you're probably getting books all the time for blurbs and things like that.
Oh my goodness. It's endless. There are stacks all over my house. Yes. But it's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. So I was going to say that has to be fun. But on the other hand, you're like, I'll never get to all of these books.
No.
Well, Rebecca, as always, I love chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the Thoughts from a Page podcast.
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I hope we'll be back again for the next one.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the professional book nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always,
happy reading!
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts from a Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts from a Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
Science, science, science! Science.
Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We're a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes...
Yes! Mm.
Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.
You've got questions, we've got answers. business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.